Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
Religions. There are reasons why they have survived and thrived throughout human history. You know, you've got a tribe. You have answers for all the I don't know questions. You can just put God or gods in there. Perhaps you're alleviating your fears about death, the temporary nature of life. Maybe you just like the idea of someone or something being in control. You know, it just makes you feel better about the chaos on the planet. It is controversial to say, but there have been times when religion was useful. Of course, you and I also know that religions have been responsible for some of the most violent, bloody, and terrible chapters in our history. How about an honest and informed look at the dark sides of world religions with Dr. Jason Bivens? He has a lecture series at the Great Courses Plus. It's called Thinking About Religion and Violence. He talks about everything from the Crusades to white supremacy to blasphemy laws, so much more. You can watch this lecture and you can choose from thousands of others on a huge host of topics with your free trial at the Great Courses Plus, streaming valuable education to your computer, laptop, smartphone, or via the Great Courses app. Start exploring with your free trial at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. Sign up now. thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth. The results of the secular survey are in. It's an interesting set of findings. More than half of people participating in the survey said they had negative experience with family members because of their atheism. Nearly one-third had a negative experience in education. More than one in five experienced some kind of discrimination in the workforce. And yet the numbers continue to grow. Non-religious Americans on the rise. Despite the challenges, later on in the show, I'm going to be speaking with Allison Gill. She's the Vice President for Legal and Policy at American Atheist, the organization behind the Secular Survey. I'm interested in the subject of discrimination against atheists for being atheists. It happens more often than not, I think, in certain pockets of the United States. And not just the overt stuff. There's something about the way they didn't reply or didn't call you back and didn't include you, didn't make the phone call, didn't accept the job application. Maybe they did it for whatever reasons that they said they did it, but you just got this vibe that it was because you were a non-believer and they knew about it, they found out about it, they suspected it. There is an interesting story as published in the New Yorker a couple of years ago. I'm going to start by just reading from the article. It's called, Why Are Americans Still Uncomfortable with Atheism? This was published by Casey Kapf, October the 22nd of 2018, for the New Yorker. The article says this, Daniel Seeger was 21 when he wrote to his local draft board to say, I have concluded that war, from the practical standpoint, is futile and self-defeating. And from the more important moral standpoint, it is unethical. Sometime later, he received the United States Selective Service Systems Form 150, asking him to detail his objections to military service. It took him a few days to reply, because he had to answer for the form's first question. Do you believe in a supreme being? Unsatisfied with the two available options, yes and no, Seeger finally decided to draw and check a third box, See Attached Pages. There were 8 of those pages, and in them he described reading Plato, Aristotle, and Spinoza, all of whom evolved comprehensive ethical systems of intellectual and moral integrity without belief in God, and concluded that the existence of God cannot be proven or disproven, and the essence of his nature cannot be determined. For good measure, Seeger also used scare quotes and strike-throughs to doctor the printed statement he was required to sign, so that it read, "I am by reason of my religious," and he scratched out the word training, "and religious belief conscientiously opposed to participation in war in any form." By the time Seeger submitted his form in the late 1950s, thousands of conscientious objectors in the U.S. had refused to fight in the 2 world wars. Those who belonged to pacifist religious traditions, such as Mennonites and Quakers, were sent to war as noncombatants or to work as farmers or firefighters on the home front through the civilian public service. Eventually, so were those who could prove their own independent, religiously motivated pacifism. Those who could not were sent to prison or to labor camps. But while selective service laws had been revised again and again to clarify the criteria for conscientious objection, they still did not account for young men who, like Seeger, refused to say that their opposition to war came from belief in a supreme being. Over time, draft boards came to resemble freshman philosophy seminars in their attempts to decide who did and who did not qualify for CO, conscientious objector, status. A Jewish socialist who ran an engraving business did not, but a pulp artist and atheist who appealed to the idea of secular humanism did. Some members of the Ethical Culture Society qualified, but not others. Jehovah's Witnesses initially did not, on the theory that someone willing to fight the devil during Armageddon ought to be willing to fight America's enemies during a war. A writer turned financial consultant who belonged to no church but had read philosophers, historians, and poets from Plato to Shaw was granted CO status after 2 contradictory close readings of his anti-war play. Different boards reached very different conclusions. Various appeal boards upheld and reversed those decisions without much consistency, and inevitably some of those appeals ended up before federal courts. When Seeger's local board was unmoved by his argument, he took it all the way to the Supreme Court, where in 1965, the justices found unanimously that a draftee did not need to believe in God in order to have a conscience that could object. Seeger's victory helped mark a turning point for a minority that had once been denied so much as the right to testify in court, even in their own defense. Atheists, long discriminated against by civil authorities and derided by their fellow citizens, were suddenly eligible for some of the exemptions and protections that had previously been restricted to believers. But in the decades since U.S. versus Seeger, despite an increase in the number of people who identify as non-believers, their standing before the courts and in the public sphere has been slow to improve. Americans in large numbers still do not want atheists teaching their children or marrying them. They would, according to surveys, prefer a female, gay, Mormon, or Muslim president to having an atheist in the White House, and some of them do not object to attempts to keep non-believers from holding other offices, even when the office is that of notary public. Atheists are not welcome in the Masonic Lodge, and while the Boy Scouts of America has opened its organization to gays and to girls, it continues to bar any participant who will not pledge to, quote, "do my duty to God." Such discrimination is both a cause and an effect of the crude way in which we parse belief, which has barely changed since Daniel Seeger completed his CO application. Check yes, and endless questions follow. Check no, and the questioning ends. Lack of belief in God is still too often taken to mean the absence of any other meaningful moral beliefs, and that has made atheists an easy minority to revile. This is especially true in America, where an insistence on the idea that we are a Christian nation has tied patriotism to religiosity, leading to such strange paroxysms as the one produced by President Trump at last year's Values Voter Summit. Quote, "In America, we don't worship government, we worship God." I will link that article in the description box of this show for those who want to go deeper into it, but that's just a microcosm of what it's like. Now, there are some people already who are protesting. Why are we talking about discrimination against atheists in the United States? After all, in certain, especially Islamic nations, fundamentalist Islamic theocracies around the world, if you're an atheist, you probably get your head cut off. You'd be executed, imprisoned for the rest of your life, tortured. Why are we talking about societal discrimination in the United States? Well, we can talk about discrimination against atheists in any context that you want, but we don't discount the very real discrimination that happens to real people in every context across the spectrum. Why in the world can't we talk about people who are, you know, supposedly denied access to their children in a custody fight because a religious spouse says that the atheist spouse is immoral and therefore dangerous? Why can we not talk about employers who find reasons not to hire, or perhaps find or manufacture a reason to fire someone over a disagreement in religious faith or philosophy? Why can we not talk about business owners who are vilified by customers or vice versa over a religious belief? Let's talk about discrimination and your experiences out there, whether it's in the United States or elsewhere. Tell me about your experience with discrimination. I'll start by going to the switchboard. 647, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Sam. It's Mike. How are you?
Mike, nice to talk to you. We're talking about discrimination against atheists for being atheists. What's your perspective?
Yes, and I I wasn't going to give you an example. I am from Canada myself, and there's a lot of atheists around here, and we're a very secular nation. I think I was, while you were talking about this subject, I was going to ask, one thing I don't know about the United States is do people on the Christian right recognize that the only other region in the world that has that kind of hatred towards atheists and these other religions is the Islamic region? Everywhere else in the world is progressing far out of that. And I'm just wondering if these people even know, do they know that?
I don't know if it's hatred. There was some of that. I think most of it's fear, right? They don't understand atheists. If they know an atheist, they may not know that they know an atheist. They have been taught that atheists aren't good or can't be good or sad people with no sense of purpose. And, you know, why would an atheist continue living if life isn't forever? And so there's this sort of nauseating pity that comes out of them. But I think much of it is rooted in ignorance and fear, right? You fear what you do not understand.
Okay, I have to respectfully disagree with you on that. My personal belief is that they have a deep, like unconsciously now, but a deep-rooted jealousy of us because we get to partake in the sins of the flesh and they do not.
Now, there may be some of that.
And they wish that, you know, how dare we have more fun than them in life?
There may be some of that, but I don't think you can say they, because they is such an encompassing word. You're talking about religious people across the spectrum, and they approach atheists in a huge spectrum of ways. I was doing my 500th broadcast with my wife, Natalie, who is not an atheist, and we were talking candidly about
that. Yeah, we watched it.
So back when she was, before we had met, she would have had a totally different perception of atheists, most of it being about fear. She didn't hate atheists, but she was scared. And, you know, she felt that they were all sort of sad, angry people. And it took her getting to know one for those walls to drop. But I don't know that she was rooted in hatred. And I think that's the case with my religious friends and family. They don't hate atheists. They may, on some level, when they're being totally honest with themselves, go, you know what? I wish I could exist beyond this narrow religious sandbox that I've been forced into and be totally free. They may have that. I get your point.
Well, that's always kind of been my thing. Tell you and Natalie, we loved your 500th show. It was just amazing. You guys are beyond adorable together.
Well, I married up.
Same with me.
Yeah.
Married up.
Married way up, you know. So I look at her and I think, wow, you know, I'm a lucky guy. She's really good people.
Yeah.
My friend, you take care. I'm going to move on. Have a wonderful, wonderful week and be safe, okay?
You too, Seth.
All right. See you later.
Bye-bye.
He does have a point about, here's a great example. I'm not throwing my mother under the bus on that. But, you know, mom was the most pious, is just the best word. Holier than thou, you know, the frozen, chosen, sanctified Jesus warrior. We weren't allowed to have, we didn't have a beer in the fridge. There was no alcohol allowed in the house. No rated R movies could ever be shown. And you did not swear. I think she'd even frowned on like heck and darn, because those are substitutes for, you know, and you don't even want to look like you're trying. You want to say hell or damn. You don't want to do that. So, I mean, that's how strict it was. That's how strict it was. But about every 6 months, when mom got really mad at us, and I was a willful child, I was a mouthy force of nature. I backtalked. I know I was a challenging kid because I had a very strong personality even when I was very, very young. And so, and with a house full of kids, you know, it didn't take long before, you know, something would happen. It would drive her crazy. And she would, about once every 6 months, she would say a swear word. She'd get so mad, and it would pop out of her mouth. Shit. It was so satisfying to hear somebody who was so sanctimonious, who, you know what, when the walls were down and she was really saying what she really wanted to say, shit. And when she said it, her whole face would twist up like one of those trees in The Wizard of Oz. Just shit. Like it was just oozing out of her face. And of course, we just had a field day with that. Mom, you said a bad word. You know, we were just snot. We were just such snotty kids. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said that. Yeah, I shouldn't have said that. And then she'd be good for about 6 months. And something would happen. Damn it. It just explodes out of her. Like she was a volcano. The pressure was too great. It came out and she felt better. And I think to myself, it's an interesting look at how she really, really, really deep under the skin wanted to say the word. Like this was the expression she wanted to give. In a moment of heat and anger and frustration, just shit. And she felt better. It's a repression culture, isn't it? The words you want to say, the things you want to do, the type of sex you want to have. The whole culture of religion is not really one of freedom, which is what they say it is. It's one of repression. They put you in a box. They give you a shit ton of rules and say, don't do this. Don't say that. And then whenever all of a sudden you just get to that point where you're in the red zone and it just comes out, shit. And it feels so good. It feels so good. I just thought that was an interesting thing. What do believers say? What did I say to myself? What did I think to myself when I was in those candid moments when nobody was looking and I was being totally honest? Did I truly envy those who didn't have to abide by all these rules? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 417, hi, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
This is Corey.
Thanks for calling, Corey. Talk to me. What's on your mind?
Well, if you're talking about the little passive things that theists like to do, my little town of 2,500, I'm the only loud atheist in a 40-mile range, so I get fun little points and whispers and people kind of avoiding my family in the Walmart.
How do they know in the Walmart that you're an atheist is what I want to know.
Tiny town and Facebook and my atheist shirts and daughter's blue hair.
So you broadcast your rejection of religion.
Yeah, I've got a good without God sticker on my Jeep, and the less passive interactions I've had, people threaten me in weird ways.
What do you mean threaten?
The passive, your family's going to end up going to hell kind of threats. The soft ones that don't actually, not a direct physical harm threat.
I got you. A lot of passive aggression probably too, where they're throwing the asides out, right?
Yeah. And just a lot of ignorance on what my position really means. Son, be quiet, buddy.
He's a radio star. I like it.
Oh, he's a bold one, that's for sure.
You're not alone. You know, there's a lot of us out here who got your back at the Walmart. If we bump into a guy with an atheist shirt at the Walmart, it happens to be you, and you need backup, just grab us. We'll all group together.
All right.
We'll enter and exit.
Even in my tiny town, I still get a random head nod and a smile or a thumbs up. So.
Oh,
there's a couple more atheists around, but they're quiet.
Underground, you know, they're just waiting for the time when they will raise their heads.
Right. Well, the more of us they can stand up and actually talk about it, the less evil it'll seem, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, go take care of the kids, my friend. Thanks for sharing your perspective.
Thank you, sir.
See you later. I know some people like to wear the atheist apparel to religious events. I'm not that guy. It's interesting, too, because you look around and you see, oh, look, there's a cross necklace. Oh, look, there's a cross set of cross earrings. There's a T-shirt for somebody's youth group. There's a religious painting on the wall. What if I was to show up wearing the Thinking Atheist logo on a T-shirt? How would that go over? Would they say something? Would they chastise me? Would they not talk about it? I don't know. But, you know, I choose not to do that. But I am aware of the fact that I'm choosing not to do that. And is that the right move, keeping the peace, living to fight another day, or is it acquiescence? Am I being a coward? I don't think so, but, you know, you tell me what your perspective is. 651, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
This is Patrick. So, I think I called in a while ago. I wanted you to give me some advice on it when I'm marrying into a religious family. What I should do. But I actually had some stories about two events that actually happened within that context, I guess you could say. One time I was at a church cookout, you could say. They're all getting together and making some hot dogs and playing yard games and stuff. And I heard that this one person in the church wanted to talk to me. So I already knew that something was up. And so the moment that we get there, me and my fiance, like, walk up to him and be like, hey, how's it going? Hey, you wanted to talk? And he immediately is like, so you don't believe? I'm like, no. And then he said, but you do. He pointed at my fiance, and then he just started giving me this whole, like, when you guys have kids, not even asking us if we wanted to, but when you guys have kids, you're going to want to go and take him away from Christ, and she's going to want to take him towards Christ, and it just making it seem like I'm like destroying the relationship and stuff, which was quite uncalled for. And then at the end, he looks me dead in the eye and he grabs my hand. He's all like, we're going to pray. I'm like, I don't want to walk away and cause this huge trouble. So I just stood there politely. He prayed, and then right afterwards, I walked away, found some other people who were actually really nice, and then we played some yard games, but I never really went back in that area for the rest of the time.
So he actually just grabbed onto you, like, we're
going for it. I'm like, I'd rather not, but okay. So,
if you had the chance to go back and you knew it was coming, would you have handled it differently?
Probably. Well, yeah. I mean, the hard thing is that I was the only like atheist there. So it was like, I don't want to cause a scene because I don't want them to think of me as hostile or taking things the wrong way because maybe they've been taught that atheists just are always out to, you know, whatever. So I might handle it. I might just not want to talk to him if I knew it was going to happen.
I mean, if he grabbed your hand,
or
he grabs your hand,
oh,
and you know it's coming,
yeah,
and he says, "We're going to pray my prayer, and you are going to participate."
I would probably pull away and say, "No, thank you. I'd rather not." And if he insisted, I would, as politely as possible, tell him off and tell him that, you know, that's not respectful of me and my lack of belief. So I'd like if you didn't.
I understand what happens, though. I mean, I have been in those situations where something will happen and you haven't really had a moment to process it. And before you know it, it's kind of over. And afterwards, you're thinking, you know, I should have handled that differently. I should have said something. We've all been in those situations. I should have said something. I should have walked away. I should have told him it was disrespectful. And I agree. I think, you know, if you knew it was coming this time, you had the benefit of hindsight and he grabs you and pulls you into his personal space and attempts to overtly push a religious exercise on you. You're damn right. You've got every right to say that, no, this is disrespectful. You don't get to do this. You can pray for me independently, but I'm not going to participate. And if he does it again, that's my recommendation to you, man. You know, I'd tell him, you don't get to do that.
Exactly. And I mean, quite honestly, for a while, even after that, he was still invited to the wedding. And I kept telling my fiance, I'm like, hey, he's not a good guy for doing this. And he doesn't support us. He supports his doctrine and everything. And she actually told me that after a while, she took him off. I'm like, well, why? She's like, well, he kept asking me every time that I went to church, you know, hey, have you talked to Patrick yet? Hey, have you, you know, done this? Have you done that? And so she was just tired of it. And she kind of saw that side finally and was like, that's enough.
So she's got your back. I mean, she's coming to your defense. That's good news.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking with her yesterday. And she's a social worker, so she helps out a lot with, right now she's working with more elderly people, but she told me, she was like, with my job, I'd rather be a good social worker than like a good religious person, or like a good Christian, because my job is far more important to me. And that was really eye-opening and nice to hear.
It sounds like her perceptions are evolving. That's awesome to see. That's encouraging.
Yeah. Well, she just moved out too, not too long ago. So
she I'm sorry, I missed it. What?
She just moved out and moved into her own place.
Oh, not moved out from you, but moved out of her parents' house.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. It was like, shit. You know, things have gone south and I'm talking about the, okay.
Okay. Yeah, I'm waiting for everything to, all the economy to get back, well, work to get back before I move in too, but we got a place together.
You know what? So. I just reflected my own heathenry, my own lack of religiosity, because in my world, living together just seems like where you would be. But if she comes from a devoutly religious family, living together is living in sin. And I wasn't making that connection, which tells you how far I've come from where I used to be. Well, that's awesome. I love the idea that you guys are helping to sort of challenge each other and enhance each other's perceptions. And she sees you as a human being and she's got your back. That's amazing.
Yeah, she's told me also, you know, when we have regular talks about all different topics, but she's told me, you know, you're a really great help for making me ask questions and really like getting me to think about things. And she was saying, you know, like, my job is also really, really good at doing that. And I'm really glad that I have that, which is, for me, really good to hear as well.
Well, all my best to both of you. One day I'll have to, I don't know if she'd ever be interested, but one day down the way, I'll have to see if I can get you both on the same call. You think she'd ever talk to me or an atheist radio host? Like, how your dynamic works? How you make it work?
I mean, I think if I told, I mean, with you being an atheist and your wife not being an atheist, as far as I know, there's kind of that similarity.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, maybe on a live show, but you know, we could definitely work out like a Zoom or like a FaceTime or something.
Yeah, it's no big deal. I was just throwing it out. And we could always have a private conversation, roll on it, record it. And if she was, for any reason, not happy with the exchange, we'll just toss it, you know, so it doesn't see the light of day. But that'd be an interesting conversation to have one day. I don't know. We'll leave it on the back burner and maybe approach it one day down the way. Okay?
Yeah, I might email you or Facebook you or something.
Yeah, yeah.
See where it goes.
All right. Take care of yourself. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, definitely. You too. Stay safe.
All right. See you later. 202, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. This is Amanda Kniep. How are you?
Amanda. Amanda's a friend, everybody. Actually, she's family. And it's so lovely to hear your voice. You doing okay?
I am. Isolation sucks a little bit, and things are not great here in Iowa. But yeah, I'm healthy and busy, and really happy to hear your voice.
Oh, it's great to talk to you again. We you know, used to cross paths quite a bit when we were both kind of working for American Atheist. I serve on the board of directors, and you were like one of the big wigs. You know, you had a fancy title, corner office, all that stuff.
I don't know. Yeah, right.
So talk to me. I mean, we're talking about discrimination against people who are atheists. I mean, I know you've got a perspective.
Yeah, I mean, obviously when I was working in the movement front and center, there was lots of stuff going on. But one of the incidents that most upset me was when I took documents for American Atheists to a TD Bank in New Jersey. And the notary sat down, she took our IDs, and then she looked at the papers, which she's supposed to do. And as she's looking at the papers, she goes, "I'm sorry." And she got up and she walked away. She refused to notarize the documents, which doesn't mean that she approves of them or that she feels that they're correct. All it is certifying that the people who signed it are the people who signed it. And so that was really tough. And the first time, like in the face, outside of the movement or outside of protesters, that somebody refused to work with me or rejected me because of their perceived belief that I was an atheist.
Amanda, to relate back to my earlier caller, do you think she was motivated by hate, fear?
You know, the more I have interacted with people outside of the movement, the more I think it's fear. I think that, you know, you can look at when people commit horrendous crimes, or when people are victims of crime, often their religious or religiosity comes into it. Oh, she was a good Christian woman, or they were a great family, they went to church, or you know, they hated God. And so I think it's because we have this community, this culture that vilifies us, and it's reinforced even today by so many religious leaders and in the media and in pop culture. It's really hard to find atheists that aren't assholes portrayed in media and in culture. And so I think it's a fear and it's a rejection that you're so different from me that I can't possibly associate with you.
When you were involved as an activist, and you may still be, I don't really know what you're doing at the moment, but did you find you were constantly approached, called, emailed, et cetera, by people who treated you like the other?
Oh, yeah. You know, whether it was scouting out a hotel for a convention or just the regular email and mail that I would get, particularly that I was a woman, there was definitely a sexual component to it, messages on Twitter and Facebook. It was very much targeted towards the fact that I identified as a woman, not just as an atheist, which was an added component of how hard it was.
What do you mean sexist? Like abusive sexist insults? Or it was they were talking down to you because you were a woman, because they had a biblical view of women? I mean, paint that as far as you want to go, paint that for me.
You know, I think it's both. And I think it's I have no problem saying, you know, I got sexually explicit threats that I just needed to be raped by a Christian man, that I needed, you know, that raping wasn't good enough for me, that a lot of things that I should go back to a different country, that if I didn't think I was free, I should try being a Muslim woman, you know, that my place was in the kitchen, that I just needed to shut up and get pregnant. You know, it varied and it was awful. It was awful. And day after day, year after year, it really wears down on you to get that kind of vitriol.
They had dehumanized you, hadn't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it's very easy to dehumanize anyone that you see as other. And I think that when you put yourself out there as an activist, or you're willing to identify as an atheist or any other kind of minority, and you're seen as other, it's much easier for people to look at that label than to see you as a human being.
Have you had an experience where somebody was discriminating against you, terrified of you, and that changed? You had some sort of relational breakthrough?
No. I will say that.
I'm not laughing at you. I was like, well, given all of the people you've interacted with in your life, I was thinking, was there one example where somebody met you and thought, well, Amanda's a wonderful person? So I was expecting a different answer.
In fact,
go ahead.
The opposite. A lot of times I'll meet somebody and they'll say, you know, we like you, we want to be part of you. And then you reveal, or they find out you're an atheist, and suddenly you're ghosted, or they don't want to hear from you anymore, or they want to preach to you. I was a keynote for an organization that was not atheist related. It had to do with women's rights. And in the introduction, they mentioned that at the time I was working for American Atheists. And there were two women in the back, I noticed, taking intensive notes, which I thought was great. And they came up to me right after the talk, and they pressed into my hand a letter explaining why I was going to hell and how they were going to try and save me. And I just handed it back, and I said, no, thank you, and I turned and walked away. In my family, people were very off-put by it. Not all of them, but some of them. And slowly they've come around. You know, my dad is very concerned that I'm going to go to hell. He is a conservative Lutheran, and he does not like my ideas, but he loves me, and he gets really upset when other people criticize me. It's his right to criticize me, and he's kind of laid off the whole going to hell thing. So, you know, it varies, and it just depends how out there you are with the fact that you're an atheist. I live in Iowa now, and I'll be honest, I'm not as open about it. I don't hide it. If it comes up, I'll talk about it, but I'm not as in your face as I was when I was an activist and living in more liberal places like Washington, D.C. and New Jersey.
Interesting, the culture of boundary violation. It's something about these religious cultures. They give themselves permission to cross into your personal space and say and do the most untoward things.
Oh, gosh, yes. And I think for a lot of them, it's part of their religious indoctrination that they have this need or this obligation to try and save other people. And I just think about through the centuries how much damage missionaries have done to Native cultures and to indigenous peoples, and just that continuous belief that I am superior because I have the right religion, and therefore I must teach you, save you, connect with you.
You doing okay these days, Amanda?
I am. I work at a state university, and I do great work, and I'm having a great time. Took a break from the atheist movement, but I think I'm ready to get back in. So it's really nice to talk to you and reconnect.
It's sometimes frustrating. You know, we're an imperfect movement. And by the way, good luck defining movement. And I always say that, like, we're not really a movement. We're sort of a series of movements, different people doing different things in different ways in different places. Some are working, some are not. Some are wonderful, some are horrible. You know, so, I mean, you can't put us in a box, right? Which is one of the challenges we have in the atheist movement, because if you have an awful person, an awful activist doing awful things, saying awful things, there is a group of people who are like, well, the whole damn thing is contaminated, right? Just walk away. And it's frustrating for those of us, I think, who are activists, because we think, you know, this isn't the atheism I represent. It's certainly not humanism. I know you felt those frustrations, right?
Oh, I have felt those frustrations and experienced them and been overwhelmed by them. And honestly, that is why I left the movement, why I left having an active role in organizations. It just became too much, and I needed a break, and I needed better perspective. And, you know, it's been a couple years, but now I have this urge again to voice what being a secular humanist, being an atheist means. And I think in Iowa, there's an opportunity to reconnect with people I used to know here, because I'm from Iowa, and really start to build on that in a place where I don't think our voices are respected. There's some great activists in this state, and I'm excited to join them.
Amanda Kniff, if I can ever help you get the word out about what you're doing, I'm a fan and a friend, and you have your people call my people, and we'll do the thing, okay?
All right.
All right.
Give your puppy a kiss for me.
It shall be done. You take care, Amanda.
You too.
All right, then, bye. She's family. Somebody I tremendously admire. I've known her for years and hadn't really crossed paths with her lately because, again, she hasn't been an active part of the atheist movement. And, you know, you're busy producing content. And, you know, when you live in other states, it's harder to connect in that way. But, you know, she's the real deal. So whatever endeavor she's a part of, I think we should all be excited about. So there's a plug for Amanda. 780, thanks for waiting on me. You're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. This is Megan. How are you today?
I'm well, Megan. So good to talk to you. We're just sort of venting, talking about how atheists are often marginalized in this culture and cultures all over the world. What do you think, Megan?
Well, I called in because of the previous Canadian caller calling in, and I just wanted to share a story that's a little bit truly Canadian, because this would happen in a different type of legal framework that the Americans don't share with us. So in Canada, they allow Catholic school boards. This was put in place of more than 100 years ago after our founding. And my brother, he's a closeted atheist, but as much as his employer at the time knew he was a Catholic, and he basically went into the office to fill out his paperwork to start his job, and he put in his husband's name, and he was immediately fired from his teaching position. They had bought him a ticket across the country, got him an apartment and a car. And so not even the first day that he was teaching, but, he never lied to them, but they never asked him. And there are legislation in Canada that prohibits the Catholic school board of firing gay people, but they still do it. So there's still quite
know?
A bit.
Forgive the interruption. How does he know, or why does he suspect he was fired for being gay? Was that the only variable that had changed since they hired him?
Right. So he landed in the city that he was in. He spent a night in the apartment that they got him. He went to his place of employment to fill out health benefits forms. When he filled out his health benefit form, he put in his husband's name.
I see.
When he filled out his husband's name, he got dragged into the principal's office, and the principal said, "We don't hire people like you. You're fired."
That sounds like a lawsuit to me, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like
it was a lawsuit. He got a nice settlement, but he had to sign an NDA for it. But stuff like that happens here because the Catholic school boards are allowed to exist. Which, I mean, it's completely not separation of church and state, because, I mean, the state controls education.
You Canadians, you taxpayer-funded Catholic schools. What the hell?
Yeah.
That's all right. We got plenty of religiosity in the United States. I'm sure you look down over the border and wonder what we're thinking down here in the USA.
Well, it's just, it's interesting to think that there's some of the most secular laws put in place, but yet some of the most religious, the most religious folks, I would think, in the Western world live in the United States. So yeah. I find that very interesting.
Thanks for sharing the story. Be safe up there, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. See you. She makes an interesting point about discrimination. I think I've mentioned this a few times recently on the show, right? I was having a conversation with someone, kind of a naive person, I'll admit. We were talking about racism in the United States and the rise of this racist group of people who are emboldened in the nation of Trumpistan. And I was trying to talk to this person about how, racism continues. Racism is in many areas surging. The racists feel like they can pop their heads out more and more out of the shadows and proudly be racist. And the argument against it was, racism, it's illegal to discriminate against somebody because of their race. And I was struck by the naivety of that statement. Because discrimination works between the letters of the law. Discrimination is the stuff you whisper. Discrimination's the stuff that you excuse around the courts. You find the excuse not to hire, not to promote, not to accept, right? You say it's for another reason, but you're motivated by racism, sexism, the fear of the other. This is very true with non-believers. It's very easy to find another reason or declare another reason to disassociate, to vilify, to discriminate against them. Doesn't matter what the law says. It's important the laws be in place, but we're talking about attitudes, the attitudes that exist around the laws, that seek to bend the laws or break the laws or change the laws. That's how discrimination works. So I was interested in this very naive, kind of binary look at it. Well, it's not discrimination. It's not legal on paper. Therefore, there's no discrimination. I'm like, well, on what planet is that true? 970, thanks for waiting. You're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hey, this is Ryan.
Ryan, what's up? Talk to me.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add to the conversation regarding discrimination against atheists, and it's interesting how you mentioned Trumpism or Trumpistan, I guess is what you called it. So I currently work for a company, I won't say which, but a small company got hired on, and they're starting to do these tactics. I'd call it like a almost passive discrimination where they're sharing their views, but all of a sudden I can't share mine. And related to Trumpism, they have a life-size cutout of Trump. Trump mugs, and they're just on the verge of wearing those MAGA hats at work.
At the office?
At the office.
They've got a life-size cardboard cutout of Donald Trump in the office?
In the office, yep. And when it comes out, I'll try to sneak around and just put it back in the closet and face it the other way. I mean, I don't want to look at that guy's face, but, I mean, of course, that relates to their evangelical views. And sometimes we'll go out to lunch and I, of course, love talking about philosophy and other topics. So I'll kind of just engage them and see, just to see what they're thinking. And of course, it's these crazy, I would say disgusting views regarding how trans people should be in insane asylums. Similar points that like Ben Shapiro makes, which is incredibly vile. But anyway, I hold my tongue. I just kind of go with it thinking, all right, I'm going to be that calm person, the person that they like, that they find out's different than them. And then they realize, hey, maybe not everyone different from me is bad. So that's kind of the avenue I'm trying to take. And it's just getting more and more frustrating to the point where I'm like, I'm looking for other work. I can't be around this. It's toxic.
You haven't been able to change their perceptions at all?
It's difficult to get into it because, I mean, I lent a book to one of them. The book was Reading the Bible Again for the First Time, Taking the Bible Seriously, but Not Literally. So I thought maybe I'll kind of sneak my way in, kind of shoehorn a bit just to get them thinking. And of course, every time I followed up, nope, they haven't even touched the book.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty big project to get them into right off the bat.
Yeah.
If you have a chance over the water cooler, honestly, this might be an opportunity, and you can take it or leave it, this advice, but just to ask a few questions, you know, just do you believe the Bible? Yeah, you know, well, who wrote the book of Genesis? Do you know? No, you know, can you tell me about this? I have a question about that, you know, in a very non-threatening way. Do you think Jesus would support a man like Donald Trump? Do you think Donald Trump represents the values, the best teachings of Jesus Christ in the New Testament? You can throw those things out in a pleasant and positive way, but it leaves the burden of proof on them. And it's always interesting to watch him start to vibrate just a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. So that's a good point. I probably should attempt that a bit more.
I don't think they're going to read a book, pal. I don't. They probably won't even read a brochure. I think conversation is probably, and I'm not saying you're going to have success. Trust me, I'm surrounded by MAGAs, and it's a damn cult. It is an authoritarian cult. They see a savior narrative. God has brought this man to a position of power to represent the evangelicals. And despite the fact that he is a flawed man, God sometimes uses flawed, even terrible people to accomplish his purposes. Blah, 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 blah. So I'm not saying you're going to have a lot of success.
He works in mysterious ways.
But if you're going to attempt it, I would attempt it with questions, non-threatening, in a positive, pleasant way. Leave the burden of proof on them. And then just sort of watch him start to, you know, froth and vibrate. Let's see what happens next, okay?
I'll definitely do that.
All right. Good luck. Hope you find a better job, too.
Yeah, thank you.
See you later. All right, bye.
Have a good one. Uh-huh. All right, bye.
So at the state fair a few years ago, you can tell I'm getting older because I don't go to the fair, the annual state fair. Very rarely do I go. Like when I was a kid. Oh, the fair's in town. I got to, Mom, Dad, we got to go to the fair. Oh, we have to do this. We have to do. I don't even ride the rides. I just went to go walk around, play the games, eat the food. Give me the big turkey leg and the funnel cakes. I was that guy. But I rarely go anymore because now I'm like, I'm sorry, you want to go to the fair? Why don't I take $200 and just set it on fire? That's how I feel about it. But occasionally, Natalie and I, every like third, fourth year, we'll go to the state fair. And they had a Trump tent. They actually had a Trump booth at the state fair. And in the booth was a life-size cardboard cutout of Donald Trump. And everybody was in the freaking line to go have their photograph taken. Just smiling, that sort of, you know, slightly scary mannequin smile. And then they go get their picture taken. Here's my phone. I want a picture taken with Donald. So I walk into the booth and they're like, hey, great to see you, Donald Trump 2016. Yay. You know, so I walk in and I stand next to him. I don't know what face I made, but it was not the look of acceptance and allegiance. I promised you that. It was more like, what the fuck? Snap, right? She took the picture. And the second that they realized that I was not a fan and that I was there just to sort of mock and lampoon and go, oh, holy shit, their disposition and countenance totally changed. And you could tell they could not wait for me to, like, they couldn't kick me out of the booth. They couldn't say, get out of here. Get out of here. I cast you out, devil. In the name of Jesus Christ, be gone. They wanted to do that, but they didn't do it. But I could tell they could not wait until I left. Perhaps they were terrified I would infect somebody who was standing next to me. It was awesome. Oh, it was just so much fun. 785, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, this is Nate.
Nate, what's up? Talk to me.
Oh, not a whole lot. Just, I was calling because with some of the discrimination, I find that it's almost like it's two different worlds. Because I'm in college and whatnot, but I also come back here to my home, which is about an hour away. And the college area is very accepting. I don't want to say that generation, but like the 25 and that area is very accepting of beliefs and atheists. Like I've talked and they're like, yeah, cool. I kind of believe in God, you know, but then I come back home and it's like this thing of they expect you to go to church kind of thing. Like that's the standard. And it's just one of those things that I find very, it is almost like it's two different worlds as far as the belief of atheism.
Help me understand that. The belief of atheism, two different worlds. Flesh that out for me.
Well, belief of atheism is not necessarily right, but like the understanding people have of atheism, or like Amanda, that was her name a little bit ago, was saying the fear that people have of atheism. Like the people in my college town don't have that fear, I'd imagine just because they're less, I don't want to say fundamental Christian, but like less, you got to be believing Jesus or you're going to hell kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's correct. They're less fundamental. They're more moderate. They have walked away from dogmatism and they're more accepting, even though they claim the umbrella term of Christianity. I think you were right.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where I find it very interesting, because as you go from more rural, because I'm from rural area, you go to the ruler area, it's this more conservative area, and then when you go to these places that have a lot more population, a lot more, I want to say, diversity, you find that they're a little bit more accepting as far as atheism goes.
Yeah. I'm a fan of anybody who's walking away from the dogmatism, right? If you're a Christian, but you don't sell me hell, and you're not indoctrinating young children, and you don't want to discriminate against people of other faiths and none, and LGBT people, etc., but you still say, I believe in God. You mean, my beef is not with you, right? My main fight is with the people who are out there, who are, you know, doing what our caller said. They're grabbing you by the hand and saying, I'm going to come into your space, and you're going to participate in my religious exercise or else. And so I think you make a good point.
I'll give you a guess on what religion I converted out of, or denomination, that's the correct word.
Is it a mainstream denomination?
Not really, no.
Well, you just tell me. What was it?
Jehovah's Witness.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean,
yeah,
you must have paid a pretty significant personal consequence for that, right?
Yeah, well, and that would be the kind of discrimination as far as that goes, I suppose, that I've experienced. So far, I'm still young and I'm still kind of separating. Fortunately, my parents are rather liberal, quote-unquote, Jehovah's Witnesses. Like, so they were even approving me of going to college, which is something that's not necessarily looked at upon favorably. So it's like one of those things. But right now, only my dad knows that I am actually an atheist.
How'd that go over?
Could have gone worse. Could have kicked me out of the house and stopped helping pay for some of my college stuff. There's a lot of things that it ends up not being he has a hard time believing, like, oh, how can these things be so intricately designed, quote unquote, and there not be a creator, that kind of stuff, Basic fundamental stuff.
What's happening, though, is an interesting phenomenon. He's having to choose between the dogmatism of the Jehovah's Witness doctrine or his son. And he's choosing more and more his son. And that's a good thing to see.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that I hope when my mother learns out about me, you know, that doesn't cause her a big, huge ordeal, or my grandparents, you know, that kind of thing, of the separation that ends up happening just because you say, well, it would happen if I said I'm any other religion, but especially if I say I'm an atheist. It's like you instantly will get discriminated by your entire family network.
A lot of people find it a scary term. I totally get it. And you can label it any way you want. If you guys ever have that conversation, maybe you don't use the word atheist right off the bat. You know, I have doubts, or I'm not necessarily a believer in this God or whatever, you know. Ease her into the waters until she starts to adjust. Yeah. And, you know, then you can decide when and if you want to use the word.
I find the word agnostic goes down a little bit easier for them to understand, which is true. It's not like you're not like lying directly to their face of I am an agnostic atheist, but I am technically agnostic.
Yeah. I don't get hung up on that stuff. You do what works for you and what helps you. And you know, some people get lost in labels. They can be useful, but I wouldn't trip over it. You know, if agnostic works for you and it works for sort of opening things up and perhaps expanding your mom's mind on a difficult subject, use it. Use it proudly, and all my best. I hope things go well, okay?
All right. Also, just I want to say thank you a whole lot. Your shows are incredible, and they definitely helped me the past couple years figuring out where to go and all that.
That's huge for me.
Learning.
Thank you for that. All right. Will you be safe? Thanks. Take care, and we'll talk again, okay?
Yep. Thanks, Seth.
All right. See you later. I remember using the word atheist in my first conversation with Mom back in 2008. She just didn't process it. Mom, I'm an atheist. No, you're not. Mom, I'm an atheist. No, you're not. No, you're not. You have doubts. You have questions. We've all had questions. Like the word bounced off of her. Bing. please don't let my son be an atheist. Even if he doesn't believe in God, let him not be an atheist. And he's right. I mean, by the way, and I'm going to catch hell for this. If you're agnostic, you're an atheist. There's a whole argument going on online about this. There's a difference between agnosticism and atheism, and they get into these deep philosophies and sort of apologetics and counter-apologetics. And sorry, if you don't know that there is a God, you don't believe in a God. You don't have a God belief, you're an atheist. If you're agnostic, you're, you know what? I don't know, there could be something, but I'm not sure, I can't disprove. Yeah, there's a word for that person. It's atheist. I'm just saying. I got more of your calls on tap. Plus, in just a second, right after the break, I'm going to talk to Allison Gill. She is the Vice President of Legal and Policy for American Atheists. She's been one of the driving forces behind this secular survey. The findings are in. I'm curious. We'll get a closer look at those findings on the other side of this. You're shaving, but are you ready to stop paying for the markups and the gimmicks to get a clean, close, comfortable shave? Skip the drugstore and the retail store razors and experience, from the convenience of your own home, the Harry's difference. The weighted handle has this slick ergo design. It feels like quality in my hands. The blades are quality. The whole experience is just impressive, especially since Harry's provides their razors at factory direct prices, like $2 a blade. And Harry's delivers right to your door with a 100% quality guarantee. You don't love it, you get a total and complete refund. I'm a believer. I think you're going to be a believer as well. And right now, listeners of my show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/thethinkingatheist. You're going to get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. So go to harrys.com/thethinkingatheist to start shaving better today. Before I go back to the switchboard and take more of your phone calls, I want to talk to Allison Gill. She is the Vice President of Legal and Policy for American Atheists. She has been one of the key figures behind the secular survey. This is something that was released a few months ago. Big response to it. A lot of people chimed in. The results have come in. Allison Gill, great to have you on the show to talk about it.
Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, the secular survey, right? We talked about this a while back. The results are in, yes?
They are in. We're really happy we published this new report called Reality Check, Being Non-Religious in America. And it is the overview and results of the U.S. Secular Survey, which was a survey of nearly 34,000 non-religious people all across the country.
It's interesting. We were talking about it. I think we were hoping the respondents would be in the order of, 5,000? Maybe 10,000, but you had an overwhelming response to this sucker.
We absolutely did, yeah. During the first 8 hours, we actually passed 10,000, which was our original highest goal. So that just goes to show you how much people wanted to take the survey and how much they want, others to hear their voice and to hear from the non-religious community.
Now I can already hear people in the comment section, because there's a lot of whataboutery. Why are we talking about discrimination against atheists in the United States? It's not like you live in Saudi Arabia, where they chop your head off. You're not really persecuted, blah, blah, blah. And I just resist all of this stuff. I really think that discrimination is important to talk about on every level. And here in the United States, we do see a continuing distrust by the religious of the non-religious. So let's talk about it. Allison Gill, what's that look like?
Sure. Well, we found, especially in more religious areas of the country, much higher rates of discrimination, stigmatization, family rejection, and resulting, people concealed their identities and they had more negative psychological outcomes like depression and loneliness because of the situation.
Is it familial discrimination, workplace?
Well, yes, at every level. I mean, we saw people reported high levels of, negative experiences with their family. But we also saw a significant level of discrimination in the military, approaching 50% of people saying they face discrimination because of their non-religious identity. We saw in education, it was nearly a third. And in employment, it was 1 in 5, which is incredibly high.
It's interesting how discrimination works. It often works between the letters of the law. You know, the law says that you can't be discriminated against on religious grounds, but that's really not how discrimination works. People say, oh, we didn't hire you because of poor communication skills. Or
you're not a good fit, right?
Yeah, you're just not, you know, you're not exactly what we need. And that's often how discrimination works. The distrust of the non-believer, we've been vilified so often by the religious. Was it Attorney General William Barr who called us militant secularists and blamed us for all kinds of problems, all the worst stuff going on in the United States? You saw shades of this in your survey, huh?
Yes. And, you know, I mentioned it's about a third of people faced overall, you know, discrimination in areas like education, but it's much, much worse in more religious areas. And I think that's something that people living in more, you know, liberal areas like me, I live in Washington, D.C., don't often realize. And I think it's really important to point that out.
Alabama, what, Tennessee, Oklahoma, my home state. So when you talk about certain parts of the country, help me out.
Sure. Well, we asked folks, you know, how religious is the community you live in? And then we sort of assessed, based on what their responses were, what the percentage of very religious communities were in different states. And it lines up exactly like you'd expect, especially the Southeast and the Mountain West, like Idaho and Utah, were the most religious states. And we have a great chart that shows the level of stigmatization by the percentage of very religious communities. And you can clearly see a pattern where the most religious states were Mississippi and Utah, and they also had the most stigmatization.
Allison, anything surprise you about this survey? I mean, we're atheist activists. We're expecting it to come back slanted a certain way. I say slanted. We're expecting the results to look a certain way because of our experiences. Were you surprised about anything?
A few things, actually. First of all, there was the voting. We asked how often people are registered to vote and how often they did vote. And there's this sort of stereotype about atheists that we are not politically involved. However, that's the opposite of the truth. You know, I think most of the research on the subject has been done about the broader community called religiously unaffiliated people or nuns, not specifically on non-religious people like this survey, which is a smaller subset. So whereas the broader nuns community does not vote that often, ours, we found a voter registration rate of about 95%, and nearly 87% voted in 2016, which is incredibly high. The average rate for the general population was about 55%.
Now, clarify for me, that high number is for atheists specifically or non-religious, the nuns?
It's non-religious people. No, it's not the nuns. It's non-religious people, as in people that identified with one or more secular labels, such as atheist, humanist, freethinker, skeptic.
Okay, and that's different from the non-religious, because I usually pair the two. Like when I'm talking about the nuns, I'm saying, well, you're non-religious.
Well, that's not quite right. None stands for religiously unaffiliated, and many of those people are actually religious. About 30% say religion is very important to them, and about 60% believe in some form of higher being. So it's not the same as being non-religious.
That would be, I resist the formal setting of the church or organized religion, but I am spiritual?
Exactly. Yeah, we hear that a lot, right? But that's the broader category. And I say that, you know, non-religious people are not the same thing. They're different. And our report really shows that.
What encouraged you about this survey? Certainly, it's got to be a little disheartening to see people who have put us in this awful box. I like to mention that when you look up godless at dictionary.com, one of the definitions is evil and sinful, which tells you how godlessness has been embedded as a negative into our culture. So I'm sure you probably found some, you know, temple rubbing moments, you know, those headache inducing moments. But were you encouraged by any of the results you found?
Yes, a few things. First of all, I'm encouraged by how eager people are to tell their stories. The participation rate was so high. We actually had two open-ended questions at the end of the, you know, survey where people could talk about their own experiences and how they came to terms with being non-religious and made others aware of it. And we had 1 in 3 people participate, like lay out their stories, which is incredibly high for a survey like this. So we have over 10,000 stories. Some are heartbreaking, some are amazing, some are about finding, you know, atheist community, which can be really powerful. And so that we tried to put in snippets throughout the report wherever we could to give people a flavor of what those look like.
I hear that on the show all the time. People are like, yeah, I don't believe in any God anywhere, but come on, hear my voice. Like, I have a perspective worth hearing. And so the survey comes out and they just leap at the opportunity, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's also reflected in the fact that there's so much concealment in the community that when people have an opportunity to speak about their beliefs, they take it. The other sort of heartwarming thing is that people who are very, very engaged in local secular activities, about 1 in 5 were part of a local secular group. And we found that people that are engaged in that sort of community have better psychological outcomes. So it's an important protective factor to be engaged locally or at the national level with secular activism.
Now, what does that mean? Better psychological? What do you mean?
I mean, they have less depression and less loneliness. They're about a third. If you're part of a national organization, you're about a third less likely to be depressed. So you can see that's quite a difference.
That's antithetical to what the church teaches. If you don't believe in God, you have to be joyless, sad,
exactly,
depressed.
Exactly. And, you know, I think part of it is that the church provides some level of community, right? And that's why it makes a difference. But at the same time, non-religious communities also provide that. They help build relationships and prevent isolation and loneliness. So they also provide the benefit.
We've had our challenges, though, when it comes to community. Did you guys address that? Like secular community, what it looks like, how popular they are, whatever, in your survey?
Not as much. We didn't address specific problems in the community like that. We did ask what sorts of activities people participate in and what they'd like to see more of. The highest response rate there was resources for people with children.
We've seen some efforts to provide like daycare, and we've seen Camp Quest that are providing an opportunity for those who don't want religiously themed summer camp for their kids. And those things are ubiquitous. Anything else about the survey that would be relevant to our listeners?
Sure. We actually do another analysis of state law called the State of the Secular States Report. And so we looked at what happens when there are more, you know, positive state laws versus when there's a lot of religious exemptions that undermine the separation of religion and government. And we found there's actually less stigmatization where the state laws are more equal, which is interesting. It means, you know, we can potentially help get better outcomes if we pass laws that protect the separation of religion and government and provide equality.
I noticed you guys got some serious press, like major news outlets pick this sucker up. Can you give me some examples of some of the ripple effect that's happening?
I think there's been a terrific response, both from the community and from the press. It's been picked up, especially in those states that have high levels of religiosity, such as Utah, and those that have very low levels of stigma, such as Massachusetts. We've also seen the Religious News Service and many other sort of national press outlets pick this up and talk about the outcomes. And I'm really grateful that they've actually reached out to individual atheists across the country to get their stories and include those where possible. I think it helps, you know, flavor this and give some context.
So beyond the people behind the survey, they reached out to what, atheists in their own inner circle?
Yes, we help connect them with atheists locally in their areas, or if there's, you know, looking to speak about specific issues. Like, for example, this was in a few LGBTQ newspapers. We connected with them with people of that community.
How does somebody see the survey in depth with all the results you found?
It's all available at www.secularsurvey.org.
Secularsurvey.org. Allison Gill is the Vice President of Legal and Policy for American Atheists. And I appreciate you so much, your work, the survey itself. I'll link it in the description box, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Let us continue the conversation with our listeners. We go back to the switchboard. 901, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
It's John.
John, talk to me. We're speaking about discrimination against people for not believing in a higher power.
Interesting, because I'm kind of, I guess, going at it from the reverse angle. First, I want to say I grew up in Tulsa, Broken Arrow. So, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about stuff from there. I've been away from there for about 20 years. I live in Memphis now and grew up mainline denominational Christian, in and out of church through college. And after college, I went to work for a restaurant in Tulsa, and most of my front of house employees were Bible school students. Of course, there's no shortage of those in Tulsa. And eventually wound up going to church with one of them, and wound up marrying her. We both went to Bible school, did several years of ministry and whatnot. And, oh, I don't know, probably 3 years ago, I went back and kind of did a really in-depth, detailed study, more so than I had in the past. And at this point, I'd been away from church for a few years, so I didn't really have the colored glasses anymore, so to speak. And so I did this study with the intention of, you know, really strengthening my faith, because I started to question some things, and it actually had the reverse effect, and I came out of this two-year intensive study as an atheist. But one thing I noticed, well, first I spent like, the first year I'd gotten into, studying a lot of Buddhist and Taoist philosophy, so it's almost like I didn't have that initial religious crash or whatever, because I'd kind of replaced one thing with another. If that makes sense.
It does.
So after a little while, I found things like your podcast, The Atheist Experience. Up to this point, I'd never read or listened to any atheist material at all. So my deconversion was strictly based on my study of the Bible, the history of the Bible, the history of the church. And, you know, I finally just got to the point where I'm like, well, I don't think I believe any of this shit anymore, you know. So, but the interesting thing that I found is I started to correspond with different atheists, whether it's, you know, online groups or listen to videos or just talk to people here and there, is for the most part, these are really good folks. I mean, just good human beings. A lot of humanists, and even if people don't define themselves as a humanist, you know, they're interested in equality and taking care of folks. And, you know, let's find common ground outside of what we disagree with. Let's try to find something we can agree with as human beings. And I was shocked, you know, because of course, in growing up in Tulsa, you're just, everybody I know is a Christian. Where I am now, everybody I know is a Christian. You know, it's this idea that, oh, atheists are horrible people. They hate God. They hate Christians. They do all this terrible stuff. And I have found it to be completely opposite of that. As far as my friends and family, I guess I'm still kind of a closet atheist. My adult children, I've talked to them here and there, and I think they kind of get the gist. One of them is an atheist. The other one is, a theist, but not, I don't know that they would consider themselves a Christian. My wife is still a very devout believer. She knows that my beliefs have changed quite a bit, but not quite to the point of letting her know that I'm an atheist. The first big thing that I talked about, and it was kind of my last thing to let go of, which I think is the case with a lot of people who used to be believers and then dropped it, was the belief in hell. A couple of weeks went by. We didn't really talk about it much. And she went on to talk about, oh, I need to pray for so-and-so. I don't think they're saved. I don't want to go into hell. So it's almost like it had been wiped from her memory. And I was talking to somebody about that, and they kind of laughed and said, well, I had the same experience, and it's kind of a defense mechanism. You know, you were talking earlier about, oh, was it your mom? And you said, hey, I'm an atheist. And it's like, no, you're not. Well, yeah, I am. Well, no, you're not. You know, it's just kind of this refusal to believe that this person that I've known my whole life is telling me this, and they just, you know, their brain just can't process it kind of thing. So I think there was a little bit of that going on. And, you know, we're good enough friends. We've been married long enough. We have a great relationship, you know, that this hasn't been as rocky as I've heard in other people. So I'm very grateful for that. But
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you guys are working your way through it. I had a conversation years ago. There was a couple, and a guy had gone through the same thing you had, right? He realized he didn't believe. This was long after they'd been married. They had a couple of kids, as I recall, and she was freaked. Like, well, holy cow, what's going on? And I actually got her on the phone, and she agreed to talk to me on the radio. No, I can't remember which episode it was. It's been so long, so many episodes ago, but I was trying to remind her, you know, he didn't choose this. Like, he didn't wake up one day and say, I would like to reject everything I once held dear. I would like to abandon my belief system. He didn't wake up and say, I hate God or any of those things. He just decided to kick the tires and take a journey and ask some questions and not take it on faith, but see if it all added up. And he came to a different answer than you've come to. But it doesn't mean he's not still the same person that you fell in love with. And she seemed to really respond to that. I'm hoping it helped to encourage her that, you know, he's still a lovable person who has meaning and value and has a lot to offer. And his journey belongs to him. There's no reason to be afraid. And it seemed at the time to alleviate her. And, you know, I kind of wish I could say that very thing. You know, this guy's, he's still the same dude, but it sounds like she's not hugely traumatized at this measure, and she's willing to take at least part of the journey with you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's some confusion too, because from a mental and emotional standpoint, I am in a much healthier place now than I was full-blown church every day, that, you know, every time the doors are open, preaching all the time, and much less judgmental, more laid back, more easygoing. I handle life better. You know, it's one thing I learned about Christianity is, for the most part, you don't learn any life coping skills, because you don't have to, right? Because, well, God's going to take care of that, so you don't have to worry about it. Okay. You know, so in the last few years, through different things that I've read and studied and some counseling, whatever, you know, now I've got some coping skills, and I'm just handling the stress of just living life better. And so I think she looks at the fact that I don't pray, I don't read my Bible, I don't go to church, I don't believe in hell, and I'm doing much better than I was several years ago. She's kind of like, I don't know what to do with that.
Oh, she's watching.
That's an interesting.
She's watching.
Yeah, yeah.
She's learning.
Kind of an interesting deal, but
love it. Yeah. I love the idea that you don't fit in that box and that she watches it happen. You never know where that's going to lead. So,
me too. I really do. And I won't take up much more of your time, but one thing I'd gotten into several years ago was meditation. And fortunately, I had a couple guys that I'd sat under who weren't woo-woo about it, you know, very grounded, just very simple, you know, watching your breath, the thoughts in your head, whatever. And it really helped me a lot. And she was watching that. And one day she said, hey, do you mind if I sit with you just for a few minutes, you know? And it kind of shocked me. I was like, oh my gosh, because the little group we came out of, well, that's, you know, meditation. You're just opening your mind to the devil, right? Something like that. I don't remember all the details. It's been a long time. But now we sit together on a regular basis. She loves to meditate now. So, you know, it's just one of those things, watching, ooh, this is really seems to be helping my husband in a practical, everyday way, so maybe I'll try it. And shockingly, she's not demon-possessed. You know, so yeah. Anyway.
I love it. Well, you know what? If something changes, you know, in her journey, something you think would be relevant, you ought to drop me an email. And let me know.
I will.
I'd be curious about it. So.
Yeah, I'm so glad I was able to catch this one. It seems like I always miss the live call-in stuff, and I saw it today, and I'm like, oh, my God.
No. It's an honor to talk to you, and it's so good to hear your story. You give us a lot of encouragement. So hang in there.
All right. Well, thank you.
Take care of yourself.
I appreciate all you do, and take care.
All right. Thank you. Uh-huh. That's awesome. You change somebody's perceptions. You don't fit into their cookie cutter. They can't really process what's happening because, wait a minute, they're not all the awful things I was told they were. Well, I might be wrong, or maybe I'll bend my category. Maybe I'll reshape the category so that it allows for this stuff. And you know what? God wouldn't send this good person to hell. So maybe hell isn't hellfire. Maybe, you know, what if hell was just, maybe they just die. Okay, he won't go to heaven. But, you know, I don't know. You know what? Maybe I don't believe it. Maybe hell is something that God wouldn't do. I mean, God wouldn't send them to hell. Okay, I'll put hell over here. I'll put hell over here in the closet. What else am I going to discard to be able to accept this person? Let's see. Well, you know what? Morality seems to exist beyond my little religious pod. Yeah, okay, well, maybe an atheist can be moral. They're good. They're doing good things. You know what? He has a lot of life purpose. He didn't need a purpose handed to. Okay, fine. Maybe you can have a purposeful life. You see this sort of exercise taking place where they're like, okay, I have to alter all of these expectations because you don't fit into my box. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I wish it happened more often, but it's beautiful. It's been a joy being with you today, my friends. Regardless of where you are in your journey belongs to you. Your life is yours to live on your terms, and it's My hope for you that you are able to live an authentic life. Be safe, and I'll see you next time.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. For a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.